Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp. Well, welcome everyone to the Mental Healthy Podcast. I'm glad to have you with us here today. I'm also excited that this is our first day doing a video podcast, not just audio, so this is exciting. I've got a friend here today who I think you'll really enjoy hearing from, Mike Vaughn from Nashville, Tennessee with Bethesda Workshop. So welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me. And I guess that's a distinction or something to be the first video guest today. I told you off the air, I don't know if I'm the best person to start with, but hey, here we are, basically, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad to have you here. You work with a really neat ministry. And when I have people on the podcast here, too, you know, they're curious to hear about you and your background. So could you maybe give the listeners a little bit of information about yourself and maybe where you work a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So, yes, I do work at Bethesda Workshops. We are in Nashville, Tennessee. I have been there for 26 years now. Many people even in Nashville are surprised by that, but we have been serving participants for all those years. But I actually, even though I work there, I actually live in Charlotte, North Carolina. And for the last 20 years, I have been a therapist. So mm-hmm. I went to grad school to become a therapist and have done that. I co-founded a private practice in Charlotte about 10 years ago and have recently left that to take this current role that I'm at with Bethesda as executive director. But really, the main thing probably that I have done consistently for all of these years is to be a therapist. And so I've seen many, many, just had the privilege and honor to see many clients through all of that time. And really, it kind of blessed to be called to that, I think, in so many ways. It's been a really rich experience. And I'm actually still doing that just a little bit. Obviously, the role of Bethesda is a very, very full-time job, but mm-hmm. I'm still seeing a few clients a week just to keep doing that, because I really am passionate about having experienced God transform people's lives so much through that process. So, yeah, that's just a little bit about me. I certainly could say more, but maybe that gets us started.
Yeah, definitely. That's interesting. It's great for the listeners to know that you're an experienced therapist, too. You're not like wet behind the ears right out of grad school or something like that. So, right. But you work with this group, you mentioned Bethesda Workshops in Nashville. Could you maybe tell the listeners the web address of that and what kind of work it is more specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. So the web address is BethesdaWorkshops.org. And like I said, Bethesda has been around for a long time. And what we do is essentially both sex addiction treatment. It is faith-based sex addiction treatment. We come from a Christian worldview. But also we treat the partners of addicts. A lot of betrayal trauma, we come that. Female sex addicts, so male and female, and then also couples. So we have this kind of wide-ranging approach, but all of it falls within kind of under right now the umbrella of sex addiction. Just this year, as a matter of fact, 2024, I'm introducing healing for trauma. So we have a couple trauma workshops that we are starting, which I'm really, really excited about. I know that's going to serve the basis for a lot of what we talk about today. And trauma, my specialties probably for the last 10 years have been sex addiction, marriage or relationship counseling, therapy, and then trauma. And I've done a lot of training in all of those areas. And, you know, oftentimes, of course, those three things converge, they intersect with each other, mm-hmm. right, to form what might be this unfortunate perfect storm of things. And while really hard work, all of those, man, I have been so blessed to be part of people's lives in that way. So Bethesda now is adding trauma, kind of more specific trauma to the list of the things that we do. We already do some trauma work in our workshops for sure. We do a thing called the trauma egg. I don't know. I'm sure you know of the trauma egg. Yeah. And some other things, but this is taking that and we're going to go even deeper and further with it. So I'm really excited about that. I think that it's time to add those offerings.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense with the kind of work you do. I mean, like you mentioned, the betrayal that people experience if their spouse is into an addiction or maybe infidelity or things like that. And I can totally see the overlap of trauma. But let me ask you this. When I think about everything you're saying, I hear lots and lots of people these days talk about trauma. You know, they've trauma about this topic or that, or and there's lots of different definitions. Yeah. When you say trauma and the work you do, what do you mean? Like, what does trauma mean to you in the kind of work that you do?
Yeah, I'm glad you said it that way. You know, there's always the pros and the cons, right? And mm-hmm. so I think the pro of us understanding trauma better is that, like, now we have more categories to think about the things that have happened to us. The con is that I think sometimes we swing too wide with that, and, you know, everything in our life is trauma. And I think that's important for me to say just at the outset of this conversation, which is not every negative experience that we have is traumatic, mm-hmm. Right? And so I'll say that, but here's what is traumatic. Typically, something that is a trauma in our life or a negative experience that really, really lasts or stays with us is typically something that whether when it happens or sometimes post, it overwhelms our nervous system. It overwhelms us as a person. And what I would say about that is we are minds, body, and spirit, right? If you uh-huh. follow scripture. And so typically things that are traumatic to us are something that impact us at those deep levels in all three of those categories. And usually what it does is it causes us to... it kind of shatters the worldview that we have, whether typically about other people, sometimes relationships, or even the world itself. So not everything is a trauma, but at the same time, traumas often are sneaky. You know, something can be traumatic that we wouldn't kind of subjectively say, oh, well, you know, that thing happened to me. I was 10 and I was walking home from school and this older kid jumped out and beat me up. But, you know, I haven't thought about that in years. It wasn't a trauma. Not necessarily. It's sometimes hard for us to gauge what was traumatic and what wasn't. But typically the things that are those things that have that lasting impact, especially on our nervous system. That's I tell clients, this is a good way to determine whether kind of these negative events of our lives kind of fall in the trauma category. And that is, be mindful about your body when you think about it, talk about it, because a lot of times our body, even more than our mind, tells us where the trauma is actually located. And sometimes it's really not where we think it is, as I'm sure you know well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're touching on a lot of things here that trauma affects you in a lot of different areas. But you mentioned the body and, you know, different things can be traumatic force that we may or may not think of as traumas. But I'm sure when you see clients, they're all over the place as far as like how trauma affects them. And you do group work, I think I recall you saying.
Yeah.
And so if you're in a group, what are some of the other effects of trauma that you see in clients? You mentioned the body, it's like a psychosomatic stuff, but what are some of the other effects of trauma?
Yeah. So with maybe to expound on the body, you know, what trauma does is it tends to kind of kick us into this hyper arousal state. We become hyper vigilant. The thing about it is that's not in every area of our life. Sometimes it's with loud noises, right? But not other places. Mm-hmm. But just these ways that our body really can get stuck, right? Can get frozen based on trauma. So that's the body part. But, you know, one of the more classic things in terms of the effects of trauma is with our emotional selves, mm-hmm. right? So you mentioned groups. Often in groups, what that shows up as, and even in individuals too, can either then be like emotions on steroids, just really, really big emotional reactions and responses. Sometimes the things that don't seem like it fits. Sometimes I'll say to clients, if the punishment doesn't fit the crime, then you should probably look deeper, right? You know, if you're having this big response to something and you're like, why did I start crying about that? That doesn't make sense to me. You might want to look below that. So that's one way. But on the other side, especially in groups, I see trauma affects emotions the opposite, which is it causes numbness and more flatness and being more shut down, because that's another way of dealing with trauma is, well, okay, we'll just kind of shut everything down because the less that I experience and feel, right, the less powerful these original things are. So it can work in one of both ways. So emotions, body, like those are some of the classic ways that affects you see trauma show up. But it's also in the mind too. And that, you know, I just throw this out, we can talk about it further, but the mind part really is how we experience people oftentimes in relationships. Everything we know, if it begins with God, it begins with relationship and in relationship. And so the way we think about relationships and ourselves is, I think that's the primary thing that trauma impacts. It's one of the effects of trauma. Not quite as tangible as, like, I feel big emotions or I startle easily, but nonetheless powerful, right? Because if I believe the world to be a threatening place, I'm only going to be so open and vulnerable with the people in my life. And so oftentimes our belief system, when we slow down and we look at it, trauma causes us to really not feel safe in our relationships, maybe in the world larger. So kind of covering, I know, a lot of things there, but those are just some of the effects and the ways that it shows up. But I think some of the more common ones that I experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, well, you, at the beginning you said trauma can be sneaky, and I totally agree. It's it's like it comes at us so many different ways. I mean, you mentioned like the way it affects the ability to trust at the end there, and you know, that gets into whole like attachment theory kinds of stuff, and
yes,
how people, you know, choose to trust in the future based on past traumas. But then you also said too at the beginning that sometimes people don't recognize something as a trauma. And that right. reminds me of this past week, I was doing a talk with somebody and we talked about Stockholm Syndrome. And the most famous mm-hmm. example in America, at least, is Elizabeth Smart when she was kidnapped and went through some sexual abuse. And as her coping mechanism was, she tried to, or she unconsciously at least sort of went along with her abuser. And that was her way to survive in the situation. And when she was first found, they said, oh, you're Elizabeth Smart and you're the, you know, the victim who was kidnapped and all this. And she said, no, this is my friend. And she referred to her abuser like as her protector, as her friend and all this. But, you know, later, like now she talks about her abuse as, you know, she was brainwashed and that was sort of her way of coping to say that was her friend because she was in fear for her life. And yeah. So it's like you're right at the beginning. I mean, you said about this being complicated. There's so many ways that this goes, you know? It's
yeah,
hard.
There are. And I think that is what makes it difficult because there are a lot of ways that it can show up. And there's a range within those ways, right? So some people will experience maybe lesser of some of these things that we're talking about, and others more significant of those. And sometimes that tracks the significance of the trauma and sometimes it doesn't. So it is complicated, but we'll get to the hopeful part in just a little bit, I know. But you know, one thing I will say about that right now is even though it is complicated, there are common patterns and ways with which to identify these things. And then of course there are ways to address them as well. So
absolutely. Yeah. So that's, and of course, that's the hope you guys deliver with Bethesda Workshops, is helping people connect all those dots. And yes. once again, folks, if you're listening and you're going, this guy sounds good, I want to know more about him. it's BethesdaWorkshops.org is their website. So check that out. Now, Mike, you were saying at the beginning, though, too, you work with addictions and sexual addictions counseling. Mm-hmm. And thus far, we've been talking about trauma, but then you do addictions work. So what's the connection between trauma and addictions? How do they go together?
Yeah, it's a really strong connection. And the reason for that is when you have trauma, all of us across the board, we have to find, especially when the trauma happens when we're younger, we have to find some way to adapt and survive that, right? It's just what you were talking about with Elizabeth Smart. It's like you find that mechanism with which to kind of get through not only maybe that event, but maybe to continue to get through life now that that event has shaped your personhood, mm-hmm. right? And that's usually where addiction comes in, because there are gaps that get created in our system through trauma, and we have to find some way to fill those gaps, to buffer those experiences to get through. And addiction, unfortunately, is a really powerful medicator. It's really strong medicine in whatever form it shows up as. And so it helps people get through life after trauma, and it's not always necessarily trauma-based, but I think the traumas of our lives expose us to potential addictions. And then there are other forces and factors, of course, that usually play into something becoming an addiction or not. People often ask me that, well, why this and not that? Well, there are genetic influences, there are familial influences, there are, you know, like, there are a lot of things that go into that, but going back to the question, addiction really serves as the buffer to help us kind of get through. A lot of times when we're younger, addictive-like things, although we might not call them addictions, they really are survival-based things. But then, you know, later they become addictions. We work with sex addiction, but, you know, I have also helped clients with alcohol and drugs and other things, because really at the root of addiction is this idea of us kind of getting through. Gabor Mate, I don't know if you know him, he says we shouldn't ask why the addiction, we should ask why the pain, right? So I think when we take the addiction and we focus only on it and we don't look underneath of what's really driving it, we're looking at a symptom but not the root cause. And that's why I'm passionate about trauma, because trauma is root cause work. Mm-hmm. Addiction has to be addressed because the consequences of addiction can be so detrimental to our lives. And I think as part of addressing addiction, we have to go deeper and look at what's really driving it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have to digress here for a second, because listeners might, may or may not know that I've also worked with sexual addiction stuff a little bit in my background too. And one of the common things that I ran into, and I want to pose this to you, is particularly from men who struggle with pornography, is they say, well, how do I know if pornography is an addiction per se versus, you know, just something that, you know, I enjoy doing per se. And of course, a lot of times they'll rationalize and say, well, hey, all guys look at porno and that's just normal. And if you say you don't, you're some prude or something like that. And they'll try to like act as if that's just the norm. But I guess I should ask you, when you work with this topic and a client says to you, you know, how do I know if it's an addiction per se or not, or just a habit? How would you respond to somebody with that?
Yeah, there are a few things that we use to gauge addiction. Uh-huh. The first is, have you ever tried in earnest? Have you tried to stop it? Like, have you had periods of your life where you didn't want it, you tried to stop it, and even if maybe temporarily you did you go back to it, right? And uh-huh. A lot of times people will say, yes, I did, and I went a whole year, and I said, okay, well, what happened at the end of that year? Well, I started again, right? Okay, so we have that. Has it impacted your life adversely, right? Maybe just for you in the way you see yourself, or maybe though in your relationships outside. And so because of that, you have made efforts to stop it, but not been able to, right? And then it has continued to impact your life adversely. In the old days, we used to include on this list, you know, how much money have you spent on said thing? Now, unfortunately, with pornography today, you, of course, don't have to spend any money on it. But what I'll often challenge my clients to think about is, yeah, but what is your time worth? Like, how much time mm-hmm. have you lost on this? Because whether you're in an hourly job or not, or regardless, in any time that you have lost value in your life with this thing. And is that really how you would have wanted to have spent that time, mm-hmm. right? And so how much time have you spent? And then therefore, what maybe kind of a cost has it really taken on your life? So those are three quick ways. When you go through those clients, if they answer those honestly, it helps the process of understanding addiction. The thing about pornography, for example, or other forms of sex addiction is that not everyone is addicted to it. People may look at pornography, they may decide to stop, and they may truly actually stop and not look at it anymore. Mm-hmm. Obviously, those people are not addicted to the thing, but for those who have made those efforts, or even internally have wanted to, who have had those external consequences and have continued, that typically is a good starting place, at least for the conversation of whether it's addiction or not. So those are just a few, usually, of the markers that we look for.
Yeah, well, that's good. That sort of helps people, you know, self-diagnose maybe a little more accurately instead of just wondering and freaking out about it. Well, let's – I know this topic is heavy and it's, you know, shame-based for a lot of people. And so let's get to the hope part. let's get to the treatment part. Since you mentioned earlier how sex addiction and trauma are connected, how do you treat this? Like, what do you guys do with your workshops and or in the therapy that you do?
Yeah, there are a number of different ways. So at the workshops, we do a fair amount of teaching and talking about just what you and I are talking about, what it is, how to identify it, the effects. Like, you know, I think awareness is an important first part of this whole process. Mm-hmm. But after that, we really get into people's stories. We really begin to understand, well, what are the roots and the origins of the negative things that you've experienced in your life? And this is not just to kind of arbitrarily dredge things up, but it's to understand, like, what might still currently be active in your life that's going to make it difficult for you to stop doing X, Y, and Z. And then in our workshops, the next kind of step is we teach a lot of tools and ways to work with this, because addiction is not like other things that we, you know, want to stop. And like, if something is truly an addiction, it takes usually a lot more to work with it and stop it than other areas of our life, you know, that aren't addictive in nature. So we teach a lot of tools and we reinforce that process, the chief of which, of course, by the way, is community, right? So what's wonderful about our workshops at Bethesda, and I think any groups, is that you right away have this group of people that is a strong community. You know, that's what I love, is to watch these relationships develop over 4 days' time. People leave with deeper connections than they could have had. It would have taken them years to do that outside the workshops. And that's true of other therapeutic groups as well as some of the 12-step groups and such, which we always recommend. So we're talking about how to treat. Community is the way. So I think addressing trauma, but also developing community. You know, oftentimes through the years, Christians will come to me and say, yes, I really think this is an addiction, but I just want to keep praying about it and just let God work on me with it. I don't want to tell anyone else or involve anyone else with this. And the reason for that is exactly what you said, which is usually shame. Mm-hmm. And to that, I will typically say, yes, of course, we want you to keep praying and doing spiritual disciplines with this. But here's the thing. Like, to take a biblical approach to this, you have to involve community, because God created us to be connected to one another, and our health depends on our connections with others and Him. So you have to have both together. So the treatment for addiction involves community. It's very, very difficult. I would say probably almost impossible to really recover from addiction and be healthy without a larger community around you. So that's one section. The other section, as far as trauma specifically is concerned, like in our workshops, we do something called experiential therapy. And that's just kind of a way to, we say, if it happened in experience, it has to be healed in experience. It's a way to recreate situations to allow the healing to occur. Hard to describe, but a super powerful therapeutic form. I know you know all about it. Maybe you can add to this, but for anyone listening out there, there are also other really effective trauma treatment methods like EMDR and brain spotting, experiential therapy for sure, and certainly typical talk and processing therapy is really powerful as well. I personally, through all of my years as a therapist, did a lot of EMDR and a lot of brain spotting as a way to treat the deeper things. So I don't even know if I'm on topic with your question, but basically that's, in a nutshell, if you want to talk specifically about trauma, whether connected to addiction or not, like, those are some of the treatment methods that we usually use to effectively kind of address those wounds.
Yeah, absolutely. You've touched on a lot of great stuff. You know, the group work reminds me of, you know, all the 12 steps have a lot of cliches and phrases they use, and one of their cliches they say is, you're only as sick as your secrets. And and of course, the goal of the group is to process and share your secrets so they no longer hold you captive. And that's so freeing. Like I've seen in the groups, just like you're saying, people admitting, oh, I did such and such. And, you know, whatever it is, it's very shameful. The moment they share that story, it breaks down the shame and they're no longer held captive by it. And that's so powerful. And then when you mentioned it being experiential, I'll share one technique. You've touched on a lot of them. But there was a therapist I used to work with who you know named Eli Machen. And he used to do what we would call the Pool of Bethesda exercise. Mm-hmm. And it's listeners, you might find this interesting. And you recall in the Bible, there's a story of Jesus who came to the Pool of Bethesda. And there was a man that had been sitting there. And the story is that the angel would come and stir the water and the first person in would be healed. And this guy had been there for a long time. And when Jesus came and met with the guy, he said to him, "Do you want to be well?" And it's a weird question if you don't get what's going on. It's a great psychological question. And what we infer from it is that this man could have been healed a long time ago if he really wanted to be well. And that, you know, he's probably getting some kind of secondary gain from sitting there. And so we say to the clients, or Eli Machen and I, and maybe you do this too, Mike, we would say to the clients, you know, there's a lot of benefits and perks you get from your addiction. And so what Eli would do is he had this recording of this running water sound, and we would have the men literally lay on the ground in our therapy room, and he would have this running water sound, and he would read that scripture, and talk about good biblical integration. He would read the scripture, the story of the Pool of Bethesda, and we would tell them, you know, don't get up until you're asked to get up, but Jesus says to you, do you want to be well? And then he would elaborate on, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you might want to stay in your addiction. You know, does it feel good when you're in the middle of it? Yeah, it does. Does it temporarily, you know, take away the sense of hopelessness and anxiety or stress and all that? Yeah, it does. Like, there's a lot of things that addictions do that they really do work in the short term. And so you remind them of why they're doing their addiction. But then the words of Jesus come back again and again is, do you want to be well? And so he would mention, you know, the perks of an addiction. Then he would say, and Jesus says, do you want to be well? and then, of course, at the end, you say to them, you know, you do a cost-benefit analysis while you're sitting here, hearing the music, you know, the water running sound, and you're by your own Pool of Bethesda right now. And you decide, do you really want to be well? Mm-hmm. After you've thought about all the fun parts of your addiction. And that's a great experiential exercise. And what I found when we did it with the clients, and you may still do it, is that's what we would call a corrective emotional experience. If they're really living it in the moment and they're really emotionally feeling everything, they start to have a new experience of conceptualizing their addiction. So I don't know. Do you still use that exercise?
That particular one we don't, but that's a great example of a lot of the different kinds of things that we do. I love that. Maybe we'll reinstitute that. But no, that's a great example of experiential. It's hard sometimes to get your mind around what experiential therapy is, but it does really recreate those scenarios. And, you know, one thing that you're bringing up, I think, is important to mention, and that is the reason that it is difficult to address addictions. Number one, it's usually a very, very strong neurochemical response to whatever is the substance, even if that's sexual, of course. But number two, in leaving addiction behind, right? Jesus said, do you want to get well? What he's really saying to him is count the costs of what this is going to mean. And are you really willing to deal with that cost? And oftentimes, not only in the workshop, but even with my individual clients, we'll talk about grief as part of the recovery process. Like, it's not as simple as, okay, well, that addiction was detrimental to me, so I'll just put that aside. Well, actually a lot of times we have to grieve the loss of this thing that has helped us, just like you're saying, through time. And that can sometimes blow people's mind because they think, well, no, this was really negative. It didn't help me at all. I'm happy to let go of it. And I'll normally challenge that because it's actually not that simple. We oftentimes do have grief as part of that releasing process. Because I think anytime you're stepping into a new land, a new frontier, the Israelites experienced this, right? Like they're right on the doorstep of this promised land, but they had to fight their way through that. Like God didn't just wipe everything out and give it to them. They had work to do in order to get there. And I think with addiction, that's it. Like there's this new promised land that is available to us, but we have to work to fulfill that promise. And we have to leave that which what we know and what is familiar, which can be really scary. And there's loss associated with that. So I just would throw that out there. That takes it maybe a different direction and a little bit deeper. But oftentimes people don't understand that they actually have to grieve the loss of the addiction in order to truly recover.
Yeah. Well, you're touching on the whole thing of, you know, people really believing and committing to their recovery and, you know, committing to the process. And, you know, them committing to it takes hope that this is going to work. And, you know, hope is like foundational to even having any efforts. So how do you go about creating that hope or when they have a trauma history, how do you, through your therapy, you know, create that hope in people?
Yeah, it's twofold. The first, whether it's just trauma that we're working on that's not connected to addiction, and also when it is connected to addiction, it's, you know, doing the trauma work in whatever form that looks like, and then starting to see that play out in everyday life. I will often ask my clients to just keep track, even loosely, of their weeks as we go along. And I'll say to them, take note of when you start to have different reactions and responses to your everyday life than what you used to have. And at some point, they will come in and say, gosh, you know, this person cut me off in traffic, and before I was raging at them. And now, you know, this week, actually, I noticed I was just a little bit irritated, but it was much less. That's weird. And I'll say, that's the type of stuff that you want to take note of. So hope comes from, as we begin this work, it really does show up in those little ways in everyday life. And if you'll take note of it, you'll begin to kind of collect this list of things that are different than what they used to be, even in small ways. So that's one thing. The other thing is what we've already touched upon, though, but super, super important. And the hope comes from really the community. It comes from having those different interactions with those around us, but also having the support of people who understand. And that might be the support of people who have also been through trauma and understand, or trauma and addiction, or whatever the case may be. And like you said, it's so powerful to share some of those more vulnerable parts of your story and to receive acceptance back, which is what God offers us. But when we offer that to one another, it breaks through that shame, like you talked about, which I love, and it connects and bonds us. And that's where the hope is. That level of connection with other people is incredible. I mean, that is what we're put here to have. It's just that, you know, the fallenness and sin has of course corrupted that process. But that's why I love trauma work, even though it's really difficult, and also addiction work, because as God heals those places, we so much more richly connect with others. And that's where the hope is too, is to have those deep connections.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so biblical. I mean, like I think of Galatians 5, bear each other's burdens and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. So when people share their addictions and share their shame and their struggles and they break through all that shame, you're bearing that and you're fulfilling the law of Christ. You're living out God's acceptance and love for them. And that's awesome. But I tell you, Mike, you know, our listeners right now, I've got, you know, a lot of professors and graduate students and people in the mental health fields, and they might be listening to this going, this is not my topic. or I have a client right now who's into this and I'm just overwhelmed or something, and they might need to refer to you and your ministry. Could you give us a little more information about Bethesda? Like if there's a person listening and they go, this is beyond anything I can deal with, how would they refer to your organization? Because I know your organization is one of the top level ones in the country or the world, really, that deals with sexual addiction from a Christian perspective. So how would they reach out to your organization, and what kinds of services, per se, do you have?
Yeah, so anyone who is working with anyone and wants to use us as a resource, we want to be a resource, whether a participant comes to our workshop or not. And by the way, we have a lot of resources on our website, as I'm sure you know. So I'll say that again, which is BethesdaWorkshops.org. But if someone out there is listening to this and they either want to refer someone or they have a question about what we're talking about, let me give my email address, because I'm always happy to be helpful to others. So it's M as in Mike, Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N, at BethesdaWorkshops.org is my email address. And so people can email me if they would like to. I always want to help, right? I'm a therapist, I'm a helper, and Bethesda does too. And, you know, even if someone were to reach out for resources of something that we don't offer, if we can be of help, we're happy to do that. So either the website or you can email me. We have a phone number on the website. We have a general information form. People can reach us a lot of different ways. And then we have different people within the organization that can help with different things. So they're welcome to reach out to me if they have any questions.
Yeah. And earlier too, you mentioned like a 4-day workshop, like for, is that just for male sex addicts, or is it, do you work with females too, or couples, or what kinds of workshops do you have?
Everybody. So we do have a 4-day workshop that's just for men.
Okay.
And that's our sex addiction recovery workshop. We have a workshop that is just for female sex addicts. It's one of the few in the country that really do this work, and it's certainly one of the very few that come from a faith perspective and do the work with a Christian worldview. Like I mentioned, we have a partners workshop. So those who have been betrayed by addiction, we do that workshop. And then we have couples, and then we have trauma. So those are the, we really try to cover, at least within the sphere of sex addiction or partner trauma, we try to cover the full gamut of those. And then we also, I should mention, for those who come through our workshops, we have aftercare groups that they can join just to kind of keep that process moving. Those are run by a couple of our staff. So great groups, really helpful. So we have, I hope, a broad range of things that we can offer people.
Yeah, it sounds pretty comprehensive. And this is all in Nashville, Tennessee, right?
It is. Yep. Now the aftercare groups are virtual, so that's nice. People can go back to, I mean, we have, like you said, we literally have people from all over the world that attend our workshops. And so they can go back to wherever home is and be part of those groups. But as far as our actual workshops, right there in Nashville, it's 10 minutes from the airport. It's really, really convenient. We have our own facility and everything. And so it's great. We have a lot of space to work with.
Yeah. And listeners, if you're not familiar with Nashville, it's a big international airport, and all the major airlines have flights in there. So this is a really convenient resource for your clients to get to.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, Mike, I want to be cognizant of your time and the time of our listeners, and we're getting near the end here. And I always ask everyone, some final thoughts or anything God's put on your heart to share. So what final thoughts do you have for the listeners about your ministry or this whole topic?
Yeah, my final thought, I really want to be hope. I know that we've been talking about that, but, so often whether it's trauma-based kind of experiences or addiction experiences or the combination, people often either come to me or come to Bethesda with a significant loss of hope. And like, and the question is like, can I get better from this? Can I have a different experience in my life? Or is this just it for me? And so I really, really want people to hear me say 100% that it can get better. It does require hard work, and it's usually things that we often maybe don't want to do, right? But God's calling us to do. But He is so faithful to us. The other part of Jesus asking, "Do you want to get well?" in John 5 is, of course, the man says yes, and God heals him. The thing is that God will heal us when we are willing and we are open. It may not look like what we would prescribe, but it's him and in his right timing. And so I just want people to have hope. Whatever is that struggle, it can get better. It can be overcome. And there are resources, of course, out there to help with that process.
Well, that's a good word. And I hope that is encouraging to you listeners. You know, that Mike and his ministry, BethesdaWorkshops.org, they are bringing hope to people all over America and around the world. And I know you do have clients from all around the world that fly to you there. And I tell you, listeners, I have heard from a number of clients of theirs over the years how it's helped. They are walking in freedom. And the overcoming of shame and grief and guilt that they feel is just amazing. And so there's a lot of joy that comes from the work. So thank you, Mike, for doing this work. I know it's tough.
Thank you for having me.
It's tough work, but it's so good. And I can just tell you're committed to it. And I really respect the work that you guys do.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been great to be on this, by the way. Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you being a guest here. And listeners, with that, it's about that time. So thanks for joining us today. We're glad to have you on the Mental Healthy Podcast, and we'll look forward to having you with us next time. So thank you so much, and thank you, Mike.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.